This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. The skyline of the nation's financial capital on Wall Street looks very different than it did just a few days ago. Over the weekend, Lehman Brothers, one of the most venerable and biggest investment banks, was forced to declare itself bankrupt. Another, Merrill Lynch, was forced to sell itself. Today, crisis talks are underway to stave off the collapse of the biggest insurance company in the country, AIG. Experts tell us these are just the latest dominoes to fall, that there may well be more, and that the cascade began with the bursting of the mortgage bubble. But it also leaves a lot of people west of the Hudson wondering what it means to them and asking just how bad it is. Are you scared? And of what? Our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog. That's at npr.org/blogofthenation. Later in this hour, the opinion page, a Yale student makes his way into North Korea and finds that it's not that bad. And first joining us to translate the news and justify or pacify our fears is Dean Faust. He's the Atlanta Bureau Chief for Business Week and joins us from the studios of WABE in Atlanta, Georgia. Dean, nice to have you back on the program today.
Oh, nice to be with you.
And when both the President and the Secretary of the Treasury come out to talk about the basic soundness and flexibility and resilience of the American economy, boy, it sounds like bad news.
Exactly. You should check for your watch. This is a scary moment. You could go to Google and type in the phrase, are we in a depression or something like that? And you will find no shortage of websites and prognosticators that will predict that we're hurtling over the precipice into the next Great Depression. I'm hopeful, and I think that we'll come out of this okay. But it's going to be a tough slog going forward. I think we could be kind of slogging through the mud for the next 18 months until all the banks and financial institutions completely work their way out of these problems. But it's not going to be fun, and I think Wall Street is forever changed.
Forever changed. It is. It's an institution that has, it's been responsible for an enormous degree of prosperity in this country.
It has. But I think what we're seeing there, I think there are a couple of developments that are transpiring at the moment. One, I think that we could be coming, this could be the end of the era of deregulation. And by that, I mean, if you look back over the past 20 years, we deregulated the airline industry, we deregulated energy and trading, and we deregulated a lot of the functions of the financial markets. And a lot of these Wall Street firms, the Bear Stearns and the Lehmans, began to steal a lot of business that were done by the old SNLs of George Bailey's era and the traditional commercial banks. And what are we left with now after 20 years of deregulation? And I think the pendulum's going to swing back. There are going to be a lot more restrictions placed on financial entities. And, you know, the downside is that maybe a little less innovation. The upside is maybe we don't have to go through these volatile swings every few years.
So a more closely regulated industry might not have gotten itself into a situation where it was buying up a lot of these toxic subprime loans that seem to have poisoned the entire system.
Exactly. The truth about Wall Street is that a lot of the various functions and services that they provided 20 years ago, 15 years ago, handling trades for investors and a lot of other mundane tasks that once were quite profitable were taken away. I mean, now we can trade stocks for $7 a trade on the internet. Once upon a time, we would have paid $200 for that. And so what the Wall Street firms, they became less, they didn't handle the old-fashioned businesses that they did of underwriting securities so much and handling trades of stocks. And they started to look for areas that weren't commoditized. And so they engaged in financial engineering where they would create new products called, collateralized debt obligations and collateralized mortgage obligations. There were rocket scientists, and they were trying to create products that didn't exist before and that were much more profitable for them. But a lot of these products were never tested, and they were based on assumptions that didn't prove true. And so now you're looking at a problem that for Wall Street, the subprime problem, $400 billion. Worldwide, we're probably talking a trillion.
Let's see if we get some callers in on the conversation. 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. Our guest, Dean Foust, the Atlanta Bureau Chief for Business Week. Lewis is on the line. Lewis with us from Traverse City in Michigan.
Yes, a couple comments, and then I'll take the responses off the air. First of all, I'm in my 70s. My husband's in his 80s. We're GM retirees. And, excuse me, about 40 years ago, my young son in junior high came home all upset because an instructor told him about how high the taxes could be if you made a certain amount of money. And I told him at that time that if you made that much money, that you would either know someone in Congress or know how to do loopholes through your tax advisor. I have been a supporter of universal health care, even though we had good health care through my first husband with Ford, who was hit last year with the changes, and my present husband, who's a GM retiree. Hold on to our pension. The thing is I don't think a lot of people realize that when these things are occurring, we have, besides our pension, which was reduced with early retirement, that's our savings. We've kept them in CDs rather than investments because we knew we were not that capable. We're not stupid, but we knew we were not that capable nor wanted to spend the kind of time.
And I don't mean to hustle you along, but what is it that you're worried about?
Well, the thing is, there's two things. One, if you have your savings in something like CDs or that, you may not lose them like an Enron or investments, but you are hit with really low interest when they're trying to sustain stocks. And then they've encouraged people, including our kids in that, to have their pensions with investments. And most people don't know how to handle investments. They're not Warren Buffett's. And they have them with these companies in that that obviously don't know how except for their high people. So the last thing is Americans have to learn that's our money that's being used, our small amounts or bigger amounts that are in the banks or credit unions, although we keep ours more local with credit unions. We think that's safer. And the thing is that they hit us with either higher fees or lower interest, et cetera, and we're being taken. I'd rather pay 50% tax like in Sweden and have universal health care and have the university and you know, all those basic benefits shared by everyone.
Okay.
In the present system.
It's
just capitalism run amok.
Thanks very much. Capitalism run amok. Is she right to worry about that is health care part of this?
I'm not sure if health care is part of this. One comment I have from listening to her is I do think that we as a investing public are probably going to be much more wary about the financial engineering of Wall Street and the financial services arena and the degree to which they were selling us on CDOs and CMOs and auction rate securities. I do think we're going to see the pendulum swing back toward safer forms of investing. Peter Lynch once famously said that if you can't describe it or draw it with an investment or a company stock you want to buy, if you can't describe it with a crayon on a napkin, you shouldn't buy it. And I wouldn't know how to describe a CDO or CMO or auction rate security, so I probably shouldn't buy it. Interestingly, I thought she was going to go in a different direction because she mentioned a retiree from General Motors. And one of the big questions over the weekend and today is, why did Treasury Secretary Paulson allow Lehman Brothers to fail? And I think it's because there was certain risk. I mean, we all held our breath who follow either people who work on Wall Street or like myself who write about it, all held our breath when the stock market opened this morning at 9:30. Were we going to see the stock market down 1,000 points or 2,000 points? Nobody quite knew. He felt he had to draw a line in the sand because I think he realized that enough was enough. The government did help bail out Bear Stearns, but you couldn't keep bailing out every troubled company because if you bail out Lehman, you've got AIG right behind you. And if right behind AIG is Washington Mutual, WaMu, and right behind WaMu is Ford and General Motors because their CEOs, they saw what was going on in Wall Street and they started coming to the government saying, hey, we need loans too if you want to save our companies and maybe help us, then help us invest in the next generation of, you know, fuel cell cars and such. So
yeah, they want $25 billion for that.
Where did it end? Where did the handouts end? And I think he felt that it was going to be risky today, but he had to finally draw the line in the sand.
Well, it's not hard to find losers in the collapse of Lehman Brothers, but there are also economic winners. Here to give us a take on who won and who lost, at least for now, is Heidi Moore, lead writer for the Wall Street Journal blog Dear Deal Journal. And she joins us from the offices of the Wall Street Journal in New York City. Nice to have you on the program today.
Nice to be here. Thanks.
And let's start on the positive note. Who are the winners?
Well, there are a lot more winners than you would think. For the Fed and the Treasury, they actually turn out to be winners in this because they were on the hook, as Glenn said, for bailouts, you know, to the crack of doom, basically. They would have to bail out AIG, WaMu, any of the other banks that came into trouble if Morgan Stanley were to be next, even though there's no indication that's the case.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the reason that they are winners in this is that they don't have to extend the financial wherewithal anymore to help support these bailouts. Another reason is that Hank Paulson really seems to be the man of the hour. He's Treasury Secretary. He's only been in the job about 2 years, and suddenly he has reformed the entire landscape of Wall Street. And what an immense impact to have in less than 24 months.
A job he might not have asked for if he'd been given the choice.
Yeah, the commenters on the blog believe wholeheartedly that Hank Paulson has to be just slapping his forehead right now. But, you know, whether that's the case or not, he certainly managed to wrangle a solution out of Wall Street. And although it took a few tries and a couple of failed attempts, he did get Wall Street around to his way of thinking. This whole thing that happened was really a violation of an unspoken agreement between federal regulators and the Wall Street investment banks like Lehman and Merrill Lynch. A lot of individual investors could have lived their whole lives without knowing how Lehman worked or mm-hmm. Merrill Lynch worked or Morgan Stanley. And that was because the assumption was they would deal with the sophisticated side of the market, the institutional side. And what happened is, you know, with the subprime mortgage mess, all of a sudden they got dragged into the retail business and the impact of a retail failure, which is the mortgage failure. And then they became a national issue. So the Fed really had to step in.
Among the losers may be the city and state of New York. The governor, David Paterson, said today 30,000 jobs, as many as that, could be lost in this crisis. We'll talk more about winners and losers with Heidi Moore of the Wall Street Journal and take your calls with Dean Faust of Business Week magazine. Stay with us. 800-989-8255 is the phone number. Email us talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Everything is over, wrote Emmanuel Lehman, one of the three brothers who founded Lehman Brothers. That was in 1862, and the Civil War had just cut the Alabama firm off from New York, where they did most of their business. His anguish was premature. The investment firm survived the Civil War and the Great Depression. Today, though, everything is over. Lehman Brothers filed for bankruptcy protection this morning. You can get the latest details on the story at npr.org. Today, our focus is on what all this means to you. Hearing the news on Wall Street, are you scared? What of? Our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Dean Faust is with us, Atlanta Bureau Chief for Business Magazine, Business Week, and also with us Heidi Moore, the lead writer of the Deal Journal blog for the Wall Street Journal. And we were talking just a moment ago about winners. What about losers in this new Wall Street architecture?
Well, they're countless. The immediate ones are Lehman's employees, 24,000 employees, more than $10 billion of wealth lost. And they're not all rich bankers and traders. A lot of those are workaday people who wanted to improve their lives and worked for a securities firm in order to do that. Their stock has been wiped out. Their jobs have been wiped out for the most part. And a lot of them were very loyal. And so they're seeing a culture that they built also wiped out. So definitely bad news for them.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to be bad news for taxpayers because they're not really suffering. But other Lehman shareholders, anyone who might have invested in Lehman, also has to be shocked. This is the first bailout in which the stock has been dragged to zero. You know, Bear Stearns.
There was no bailout.
Yeah. No, exactly. I mean, it was a forced Chapter 11 bankruptcy filing. But
yeah,
so Bear Stearns got some value, Fannie Mae, but not Lehman.
Not Lehman. It's worth exactly zero. And down the road, I guess, as you were saying, the competitors might be winners. But isn't confidence in the entire financial system shaken?
You know, that's a really good question, and it takes some time to be seen. As Glenn said, we were expecting a bloodbath this morning. Luckily, that has not been the case. The markets have been dented, but not by any means dragged down unduly. But the you know, what's happened here is a lot of bending and breaking of rules. And although it's helped right things perhaps for the short term, in the long term, will that make people fear that the financial system doesn't work in a rational order? That's a real risk. The issue here is that these markets have been running on fear. Lehman Brothers was adequately capitalized, but people started on fear pulling their business from the firm. Same thing happened with Bear Stearns, and that was also at play with Fannie and Freddie. And if that's the case, if it's essentially uncontrollable, I mean, are we looking at a nihilistic view of capitalism? I mean, that's really scary. So the government's going to have to do a lot to impose some new rules very quickly.
Heidi Moore, thanks very much for your time today. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Heidi Moore, lead writer of the Deal Journal blog for the Wall Street Journal, with us from her office in New York City. And let's see if we can get another caller on the line. This is Rich. Rich with us from Rochester, New York.
Yeah, hi. How are you doing
today? I'm well today. Thank you.
You know, it's like I've been listening to all this with all, you know, with the mortgage failures and all that, and I don't know at what point does the economy start teetering? At what point does, you know, after a while, all the states who have invested, all the mutual funds who have put all their money in these mortgages, and did all this speculation? At what point is this going to start hitting them? You mentioned New York State. New York State has tons of money invested in these organizations.
So do a lot of pension plans. Dean Faust, yeah. Can you help him out?
In terms of when this hits the economy,
yeah.
It's been somewhat surprising that we haven't taken more of an economic hit. But in the second quarter, GDP was up 3% and change. I think that was the result of two developments. One, the tax rebate checks, which everyone spent. And secondly, the fall of the dollar, which gave an immediate boost to manufacturers who were able to more easily export their products. I think the sense is that the numbers I'm seeing for the second half is it does start to hit in the second half, that we could see, even the quarter we're in now, we could have the first negative quarter of growth in 5 years. But the caller is right. I mean, this isn't just a phenomenon that's only going to hit Lehman Brothers headquarters. I mean, this is going to be felt by all the state and local governments that invest in these products. We've already seen local governments file bankruptcy, and there's predictions of many others because they bought a lot of this toxic waste, and it hammered.
Go ahead, Rich.
I was about to say, do you think that the government? You know, we have in this election, and I'm reading like what McCain is saying and everything, and what Obama's saying, but do you think we're going to learn from this? Do you think that the moves are going to be made to protect us? Because I think part of this is just investment bankers in Wall Street looking for other streams of revenue, and they start going after everything. They're going, you know, and they're doing anything and everything to get everybody to invest in Wall Street and in all these speculative investments. I mean, at what point are we going to say we have to control them at a certain level? Or I think this is just like, this is just a symptom of what may happen further in the future if we don't do anything to regulate or control these entities.
Dean answered some of that earlier, but if you wanted to take another whack at it?
I think the fact that the investment banks are now being, in at least two cases, Bear Stearns was bought by J.P. Morgan, and Merrill Lynch is now being bought by Bank of America. There may be a little bit more restraint there. Actually, I wanted to come back to something Heidi mentioned a second ago when she raised the question of is there going to be a crisis in investor confidence? And we already started to see some of that. Look, the United States has been a debtor nation for how many decades now? Have we depended on the kindness of strangers in foreign countries to buy our government debt and such? And in the first half of this year, we saw a lot of foreign investors in Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac back away, no longer willing, wanting to sell what they had and not buy any more. And you know, that's why I think the government bailed out Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, because the Chinese government was sitting on a ton of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac bonds. And I think the concern was that if we don't bail out Fannie and Freddie and, in effect, bail out the Chinese government, then we're going to have a hard time financing our deficit going forward.
One of the indicators of a company's health is its credit rating. Credit ratings are just as important to businesses as they would be to somebody in the market for a new home. As of now, Lehman's credit rating is junk. One of the credit rating agencies that downgraded Lehman's today is Moody's Investor Service. We're joined now by Mark Zandi, chief economist at moodyseconomy.com, to tell us more about it. Mark, good to talk with you.
It's good to be with you.
And tell us a little bit more about credit ratings in general, what they tell us, and are they in danger of being downgraded systematically?
Well, credit ratings are a grade. They're a grade on debt, a debt of companies, financial concerns, non-financial businesses. It's it gives the investors in that debt a sense of whether they're going to get paid back or not. So the higher the rating, the more likely they'll get their money back as contracted for. The lower the rating, the less likely they'll get their money back.
So if a company's credit rating is downgraded, people are going to start asking for their money back now.
Right. And so, for example, the U.S. government, the Treasury bonds that the Treasury issues has a AAA rating. So that's saying there's no probability that you won't get paid your money back if you if you invest in those Treasury bonds.
And at Lehman's, the credit rating is, as I assume, zero or Z or
right.
something.
Well, unfortunately, yeah. I mean, they're now in bankruptcy, and so very likely that investors will get something back in all likelihood, but pennies on the dollar.
Here's an email question we have from Michael in Spokane, Washington. How complicit were the bond rating agencies like Moody's and S&P in this bubble? I read that they gave high ratings to some of the collateralized debt that includes some prime mortgages. Is that right?
Well, I think there's a lot of blame to go around, fault, and it can certainly be distributed quite widely here. And the rating agencies certainly made mistakes. The ratings they put on the bonds of the mortgage securities that were bought by global investors, clearly were overly optimistic. And so that did contribute to the problems that we're experiencing right now.
As of today, are credit agencies, again, like Moody's and S&P's, are they being tighter with money?
Well, in terms of they don't...
They don't loan it, but they...
Right. They rate all these different bonds. And, of course, their ratings reflect the general angst in the financial system, the fact that the environment is just a lot worse than it was in lots of different respects. And so the probability of an investor getting his or her money back is lower today, all else being equal, than it was certainly a couple, 3 years ago. And the ratings reflect that.
Let's get Jennifer on the line. Jennifer with us from Mandarin in Florida.
Hi. So I got the education that money doesn't make money unless it moves. And I'm a small-time investor, just a landlord, and I have, meetings with investors that are similar to me and much larger. They've had all their collateralized, mortgage collateralized credit lines yanked, no matter what their credit scores were. And so they can't buy more properties. They can't fix the properties they own. And it's just quite a quandary to a simple person as to how, when you're credit scores aren't any different, and maybe the collateral has decreased in value, how banks are sitting on these massive portfolios, Countrywide, WaMu, all these guys are sitting on these mortgages that, we see the properties. They're on our streets. Why are they not moving things? Why are they not loaning any money to anyone, no matter what? And I just don't see how you're going to fix anything when you've got your money in a jar in the mattress.
Yeah, Mark Zandi, can you help around?
Well, yes, she's right. It's very tough to get a mortgage loan from a private lender institution. In fact, 90% of the mortgage market is now nationalized. That's what happened a week ago when the federal government took over Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac. And the FHA, of course, is part of the federal government. So now to get a loan, mortgage loan, you're probably going to get it from the federal government. And the reason is that private mortgage lenders are taking such huge losses on their previous mortgage lending that it's undermined their capital, the cushion they have to protect against losses, and they need a certain amount of capital to be able to go out and lend by regulation, by law, and so they're just in no position to do it, and they won't be for quite some time. That's why the federal government has stepped in, nationalized the mortgage market in a sense, and that's where the credit's going to come from.
Jennifer?
How long do you think that's going to take? Because, right now it feels like we're watching the guy stand on the high dive at the Olympics who got booed out for not moving, And,
it was painful, wasn't it? Yeah.
Chuck Knobloch disease. Couldn't throw the ball.
I think we're now at the low point with respect to the availability of mortgage credit. Fannie and Freddie were taken over, and I think it's the intent of the federal government to empower them, to capitalize them to a degree sufficient so that they can go out and become more aggressive and extend out credit. And I think, and I am hopeful, that by the end of this year and certainly by early next, we will see more credit in some of the more distressed areas of the country.
I just think that that's so long away that, and I do understand the ratios of portfolios, you know, that are held and written off to lending, but at the same time, you know, I'm having it tough, too. I'm a landlord who's got people who are laid off and can't pay. And, you know, I wouldn't mind a little handout from the government. But I'm an independent, and I don't really work that way. I just solve my own problems.
Right.
It is irritating to see these guys that we're going to take the fall in the long run for them. And I really don't appreciate that. I think it's a false economy. And maybe we should let them hit bottom. And I'm not so sure if you guys shouldn't jump out the window. That sounds really brutal, but, I mean, a $14 million severance package, why would you have a guy come and consult something that he'd done such a bad job of? That Paulson, that kind of figure, it does make sense to me, you know.
Well, the Freddie and Fannie golden parachutes, a lot of holes were punctured in them over the past few days. I'm not sure that they're going to go ahead, Jennifer, but we get your point. Thanks very much for the call. And, Mark Zandia, we're going to let you crawl in off the ledge.
Thank you so much. I do appreciate that.
Mark Zandi is the chief economist of Moody's Economy.com and an informal advisor to the McCain campaign. He joined us on the phone from his office. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And here's some email questions for Dean Faust of Business Week. From Amanda. If we're in another depression, what is this going to mean for the prices of things like education, college, automotive loans, home loans? What is this going to mean for the American people?
That's a big question. I am very hopeful, and I don't think we're going to go into a depression. We're very fortunate that when the Bush administration picked Ben Bernanke to be the successor to Alan Greenspan as the chairman of the Fed, I don't think the Bush administration was thinking this way, but they picked a man who not only was a good economist and had worked at the Fed on the Board of Governors, but also, as an academic at Princeton, had been one of the foremost scholars on the Great Depression. So he had made his name and had spent his entire academic career studying why the Great Depression of 1929 occurred and all the mistakes that the government made. And I think he learned from that, and he probably knows more in the country about that. So I think that the steps that he has taken today, creating these special financing facilities to not maybe bail out a firm, but to help keep lubing the markets are going to be enough to keep us out of the Great Depression. And if he can't, nobody can.
Here's an email from Frank in Research Triangle in North Carolina. Your guest mentioned that with all the more possible regulation in the future, a byproduct might be less innovation. How can the U.S. economy afford to have less innovation in times that call for more innovation in energy production and more competition from Asia?
That's another question for the next administration. I do think that in a perfect world, if we could maybe turn down the volume on the political rhetoric and the poisonous political atmosphere, we could have some serious debates about the amount of money that the government puts into research and development and such. I will make this point. I think that over the past 10 years, I've always felt that the U.S. economy had way too much of two things. And one was too many retail stores. And I think the markets are in the process of correcting that. I mean, you can just drive anywhere in the city you live in now and start to see the vacancies crop up in these strip shopping centers. And I do think that if we move out of the era of consumption, conspicuous consumption, that'll be solved. And Ken Lewis this morning, the CEO of Bank of America, made the point that maybe one of the reasons we're having all these problems on Wall Street is that he said, I felt for a long time that we've had way too many financial institutions and way too much money. We are a very wealthy society in the United States, but we're a mature economy that's only growing 3.5% a year. So you had all this wealth looking for places to invest it, but in an economy that really was growing very modestly. And so there was too much money chasing too many deals and too much money, you know, buying subprime mortgages and building new houses and building new shopping centers. And maybe that money now needs a little bit of the invisible hand of the government to be redirected toward R&D.
And one quick question, this from Margie in Sacramento. Because AIG was insuring bond issuers and is now shaky, how does this affect life insurance policies that they issued? We're getting a lot of calls about that.
The life insurance policy should be okay. I think, obviously, time is going to tell here. I do think there's going to be a lot of concerted effort by the Wall Street firms to help save AIG because, again, Ken Lewis, the CEO of Bank of America, made the point this morning that AIG is just so huge that it touches every bank, every major bank, every major Wall Street firm. So I think there will be a shared interest in making sure that AIG survives.
Dean Foust, thanks very much for being with us today. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Dean Foust, Atlanta Bureau Chief for Business Week, with us from WABE in Atlanta, Georgia. Coming up, a senior at Yale takes a summer vacation to North Korea and finds more than he expects. The Opinion Page is next. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.